everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ted Diamond.
I'm James French.
The topic this week is how muscles function. Last week, we spoke about muscles and awareness. This time, we're going to speak a little bit more about how muscles actually work, how they're designed to work, and why that's such an important part of being aware.
All right.
So that's our topic.
I like this topic. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It's almost like a subset of the tensegrity topic.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe a good starting point, James, would be to talk about this idea that muscles lengthen is something that seems to be more than simply getting rid of tension. So many years ago, when I had back trouble and I was trying to figure out what to do about it, and I began to experience what it was like for my tightened back muscles to let go, I had the experience not simply that muscles were overworking and needed to let go, but that when they let go, that was restoring some element of natural function that hadn't been understood.
Mm.
It seems to me to be a really critical point, because typically we speak about muscles that are weak that need to be strengthened by contracting them. That's how we strengthen muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Or muscles that are overly tight and we need to stretch them or release them, which is an absence of too much tension. But neither one of those concepts addresses the question of how muscles work in a healthy way to begin with.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the key issue here.
Yeah, the restoration of natural function, you know?
Yeah. And why that's natural function. Like, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what does it mean to say that this is natural function? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that direction to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, so here's an idea, just sort of a starting point. If you, in order to maintain sitting balance, let's say, we need to actively use muscles in the spine, deeper muscles of the spine, and longer muscles of this. And when I say spine, that includes the neck. It's part of your spine. And we need to also use longer muscles of the back and neck that go from, the sacrum all the way up to the skull. If we didn't have those muscles, we'd fall over. The spine would not have internal support. They get that from these deeper postural muscles that go from vertebra or jump between a few vertebra, basically are deep to the spine.
Mm-hmm.
And that is necessary to spinal support. And if we didn't have the longer muscles, we wouldn't be able to support the trunk as a whole. Mm-hmm. And yet, in order for the back to work properly, those muscles don't simply contract, they lengthen, or they have a quality of length. So you look at a young child, and let's say a two-year-old, they're able to sit beautifully with very, very little effort for as long as they want. And yet the muscles are not contracting to do that, they're lengthening. And I pondered that paradox for years. How is it that a muscle is doing a job not by contracting, but by lengthening? And why is it that the length seems to be an inherent property to doing that job well?
Mm.
And that's a principle you see throughout nature. I mean, when you look at a cat and how beautifully they move, the muscles are lithe, they're lengthened, there's a softness in the muscle tissue, and a cat is able to do vigorous, powerful movements, but most of their easy, natural going movements, where they're just walking or standing, seem to take place with muscles not actively contracting, but remaining lithe.
Yeah.
And that's, I believe, is a property of muscle function that has yet to be articulated, because we think of muscles mainly in terms of their ability to contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the only
function. Well, so this is coming out of the con, you know, you just mentioned before how, you know, you pondered the question for years about, you know, how are these muscles, how are these muscles working, or like, how are they performing work? That is the work of holding up an entire body, which weighs a lot, when they're releasing, you know, when they seem to have released. And so this is within the context of you having done, the work of, what, like getting your back functioning better.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say, you know, like, I mean, I can tell myself trying to police my language here, but like, you know, for the benefit of the audience, you did the work of, say, you know, getting yourself into a supported position and learning how not to tighten muscles. And so your back finally like unraveled, like muscles released, and yet your standing balance is better. You know, the effort with which you know, your muscle system is, the effort that your muscle system is using to stand up is lower. And yet it seems to be doing even more work. It seems to be doing even more effective work.
Right.
How is this even possible? Like, what does this mean?
Yeah, because if your muscles are tight and they let go into length, you say, well, you know, I clearly was doing, the muscles were working too hard. So the fact that they're lengthening means they're not working as hard. And so you see that as an improvement, but it begs the question, why, if the muscles are no longer contracting, how they do the job they're doing? Now they should. Now you should fall over, because you, without contracting muscles, there's no accounting for how you're maintaining balance. It's a paradoxical situation. Neck muscles are required to keep, or part of posture. The tone in the muscles in the nape of your neck keeps your head from falling forward. We know that because if you're on a bus and you fall asleep, your head will nod forward because muscles lose tone. They stop holding the head. The head falls forward until you realize that you're falling asleep, and then you wake up and the muscles resume the job that they're doing. If the muscles are needed to keep the head from falling forward and you've let go in those muscles, why is it that the head doesn't fall forward when you're awake?
Yeah.
And the answer is, has to be that the muscles do that job with length as part of the property of what they do. And I think that's counterintuitive, because we assume that if a muscle has to contract to hold the head up, then not contracting will not hold the head up.
Yeah.
But the assumption that the muscle has to contract to hold the head up is a wrong assumption. The muscle doesn't have to contract. The muscle is lengthening, and all it has to do is resist further length to keep the head up. That's a different statement than to say that the muscle is contracting.
Yeah, that's a whole different statement. That's a whole different statement. It's like, it's suggesting that the muscle is not just a telescoping organ, where any work that it can do has to be as a result of pulling toward, right?
Yeah.
Instead, it's that plus. It's a telescoping organ because, of course, it can shorten. I mean, this is how it moves the bones. But as a matter of holding something together, you know, holding a system together, say the head, you know, to the trunk, it's an organ that not just telescopes, but it's capable of like you said, resisting being pulled apart without telescoping. Resisting being pulled apart without telescoping.
Yeah.
And so it's like
How
is that possible, you know?
Yeah, it's a tensile structure. Yeah.
It's a tensile structure.
Yeah, and if it's a tensile structure, it's a very living, it's an organic living tensile structure that's a great deal more complex than a wire. That's tensile. Yeah. It resists being pulled apart. This is not good at supporting weight. It's not has no compressive, you know, properties, but it doesn't resist compression. It resists being pulled apart. A muscle is like that, except it's a very, very sophisticated form of that, because a muscle needs to have a certain natural length in order to properly pull back. If it's contracted, then it loses that tensile, that subtle tensile property. So it has the ability to resist being pulled apart if it's properly elongated.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, and like that's how the neck, that explains why the neck muscles don't have to contract and in fact need to lengthen in order to keep the head from falling forward.
Right. And so that's a further thing where muscles aren't necessarily always functioning in that way. You know?
In the tensile way, I mean?
Yeah, like, the, I mean, if they need to lengthen, does this mean that they're shortened at first, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I thought. I thought, well, if they're the length is simply the absence of shortening, but that doesn't explain what they do when they lengthen or why length seems to be useful. Length is useful because if nature could have solved the problem of keeping us upright with muscles contracting, it wouldn't have come up with length, but that's, nature couldn't do that. It's way too expensive. I mean, this is what, you know, I learned for myself. If your back, if you're supporting yourself sitting by arching your back, you're going to have constant pain. Your muscles are going to be unhappy. They're going to be overworking. It's metabolically expensive to contract muscles all the time. Nature had to find a better solution to the problem of maintaining a skeletal connective muscle tissue system supported in a field of gravity. It had to find a more effective way than by simply contracting, which is too inefficient. And it found it with the concept of tensegrity, where muscles don't just contract, but they're suspended within bones and then resist being pulled apart. And that way the whole structure is able to support with a minimum of effort.
Yeah.
And that's why a young child sits so effortlessly, and yet all the muscles of the back and neck and shoulders are all lengthened and elastic.
So this is, yeah, you just said all muscles. And so it's really all skeletal muscles. They all participate in this.
Yeah. When it's working well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, you know, the question of how muscle is different than just a wire, you know, how it's different than just a, you know, an inert object, how nature has created, a tensile organ that does work by being pulled apart and actually functions. Being pulled apart is actually part of its necessary function. How does nature do that? How is it different than just a wire?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's something you've studied.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you know, this is like the big claim. This is kind of like your, this is one of your original claims. I mean, I was going to say that, like, this notion that muscle is a tensile organ at heart. There's like other pieces of the body that act as tensile organs, but even the contractile tissue, even the belly of the muscle, is a tensile organ. I think that's a really fascinating claim, and it's easier to see in nature, just like you said, than it is to see in people, because people, for the most part, don't tend to be exhibiting this type of thing.
Yeah, well, older, young people, I would say often, yeah, but adults, yeah, typically do not exhibit in modern cultures, no. typically do not exhibit this. Children, you see it. You know, we admire it in kids. And we see it as, you know, a property of youth. You say, oh, this child is, you know, when a two-year-old is so light in his or her feet, you know. Mm-hmm. We think of that as just, well, their tissues are so healthy. And they're
so new.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
You know, they don't weigh a lot yet. You know, we have all kinds of like, you know, it's like what you said before about how muscle as contractile tissue is really inadequate for making further observations about what muscle does. I mean, if we believe, you know, that muscle is just a contractile tissue, then we have no choice but to theorize in that way. You know, it narrows our theoretical lens. And if we don't understand this about muscle, then we, you know, we have to say about children that they exhibit different qualities of posture, different qualities of movement and skill and effortlessness, then we're forced to say that it's youth related. You know, it's related to their young age or their, you know, the newness of their tissues or, you know, the fact that they're shorter or their heads are heavier or something like this, you know?
Yeah.
I think when you look under the hood, it's much more interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And well, I mean, muscles, my argument, when I came up with this idea, my argument is that muscles clearly perform the function of contracting, or they can resist, you know, so they act on bones, produce overt movement, or they can work very forcefully to support a weight and stabilize bones. And when they do that, like my biceps muscle here is clearly working, it's contracting, you call it telescoping, it's contracting to stabilize, to resist a force, or to actively move a part. But that doesn't explain what muscles are doing when you're just maintaining posture. And there are muscles, certain muscles, that are not doing any active contraction. I argue that they're doing something else, and that, as you said, is a different function of muscle. And sometimes people will object because they say muscles can't do anything but contract.
Right.
You know, Ted, a muscle can't lengthen. Yeah, I'm not saying a muscle lengthens as something that it does. A muscle doesn't do length. It can only shorten.
Yeah.
Or pull. It can't push or something.
Yeah.
I'm saying that muscles evolved and connective tissue, because connected, they're bound up in connective tissue, and connective tissue runs through muscles to bones.
Yeah.
I'm saying that muscles evolved in the context of a larger structure. And in that context, they're a tensile organ that resists being pulled apart. And in that context, they are naturally elongated or lengthened and resist being pulled apart. And that's a different but very clear function of muscle tissue.
Yeah. And that's an original claim. I don't think the people who are talking about tensegrity, for the most part, have that claim as part of their theoretical package. I don't think that you know,
I agree with
grappling with like explaining that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the other way around. They just say muscles work within a tensegrity system as if you're somehow just restoring that tensegrity system is going to make the muscles work well, but that's not sufficient, because you could do all kinds of stuff to muscles and it will, you know, sort of improve. They might lengthen a bit, or you could stretch them or knead the muscles, et cetera. But it doesn't, it doesn't actively address the question of how muscles work dynamically as part of that system.
Yeah. And then, so you're saying that this, you know, lengthening is not like reverse telescoping, you know, it isn't like, you know, the muscle starts like this and you just sort of will it to like get longer. No. It's a tensile lengthening. And this tensile lengthening, you know, I mean, a muscle being pulled between parts. This is a healthy organization of muscle. This is a principle of muscle function found throughout probably what vertebrates, I guess, you know, I mean, through mammals, certainly, but it's a principle that you can find as an endowment of what, like vertebrate shape or vertebrate form. And you expect, you know, if you've got this idea that, you know, muscle is, you know, one of its core function is to lengthen. It is to resist being pulled apart as part of its actual function. Then it's not designed to do that like part time. You know, it isn't like, you know, muscles lengthen when you're standing still, and then they're designed to sort of contract and sort of come out of length and maybe shorten up when you're in movement.
Yeah.
This would be a principle in which muscles are maintaining this tensile relationship or tensile function in all movements, in all activities, I'd imagine, you know?
Yeah. Well, because we have to maintain posture as a foundation for any specific movement we make.
Mm.
So yeah, it was the background for the whole thing. But I would, when you say tensile, I don't know what tensile lengthening means. They are tensile, but the fact that they might be stretched between bones doesn't ensure that they're doing their job, right? So when you say that they do have to stop contracting. So if a muscles have, they contract because molecular strands within each muscle fiber, which is like a hair, very, very fine fiber, but muscle strands within there, within each muscle fiber are overlap. That's the telescoping, that if those strands overlap,
mm-hmm.
which telescopes the muscle and shortens the muscle, that overlapping has to stop in order for the muscle to resume length. That's the thing that has to happen. But when that happens, that restores length, and now other properties in the muscle resist being lengthened further. So you can't release the internal, you can't, the internal function of the muscle resisting being lengthened further can't operate until the contraction stops, in which case the muscle can lengthen, and now it will resist being pulled apart. So I would say that the active contraction has to stop as a condition of activating the muscle's full tensile properties.
Okay. All right. Well, let me make clear what I was getting at. So you're explaining that right now in the context of, you know, the muscle system shortening and malfunctioning. Is that right?
Yeah.
So we can go into that because that's interesting. What I was saying before, I've heard people in this field, actually, I've heard people say that, okay, you know, you can be well coordinated when you're still, you know, your muscles can be released when you're still, but they're not designed to be released when you're in action, you know, like when you're in activity.
Yeah.
Like you're just, it'll get interfered with while you're doing activities, and then go back to being still, and then it restores itself. I've heard that before.
Yeah, just look at a cat leap. I mean, it's the most vigorous, active, full of contraction, but the whole thing is other components of the whole thing are lengthening. Yeah. It's just,
Yeah. So like as a principle of nature, when it's functioning well, the system is going to be tensile the whole time, right? Like the muscles are going to be maintaining that function the whole time, right?
Yeah, depending on the activity. I mean, there might be.
Yeah. But yeah, the other thing that you said was, the system can get, like the muscle itself, if it's, if it's a lengthening organ that resists being pulled apart, it can also like, it seems like it can lose that function. It can actually lose that function and become complicated, which is an also very interesting thing.
And then when it loses the function, not knowing that it has that function, we think, well, all I have to do is stretch the muscles or try to release them or have someone help release them. But that begs the question, what was lost and how to restore natural function? And you could have, simply working on the muscles or getting them to release isn't going to restore the function. You have to understand what the function is. And the function requires that if there's chronic contraction in the muscle, that has to release in order for the function to be fully restored. And as you say, that tensile, natural lengthening of a muscle as a tensile structure doesn't require that, let's say in a child, because it was never interfered with. They can actively contract if they need to, but the whole thing's going to let go into length and it's going to have that tensile lengthen quality. It's going to resume easily because the whole system is working so nicely. But typically in an adult, that's been interfered with.
It's been interfered with to such an extent that the muscles can no longer function in that lengthening way. Like they can no longer do the work of lengthening. That's a fascinating thing, I think. That's an amazing.
Well, they can't, yeah, they can't, I don't know if I call it work, but yeah, they don't, they can't, but whatever, however you say that, they can't, they can no longer, they're no longer able to resume length because they've been so, yeah, so interfered with. I mean, and what you see in practical terms is that whole muscle groups are overworked and then other muscle groups would be underworked because, if you're contracting some muscle groups, so typically people will be contract, narrowing the shoulders as a typical interference. Typically people will overwork the lower back because they're slumping a lot. And then the only way they can resume support of the trunk is by over arching the back. So the back will be, there'll be parts of it that are collapsed and low in tone and other parts that'll be overworked. And no amount of trying to fix or balance muscle groups can get the back working again if you don't understand how muscles are contracting and need to let go into length in the context of that whole system. And just saying it's a tensegrity system and muscles can lengthen between bones, or get suspended between bones, it begs the question of how of what's happening in the muscles that needs to be restored.
And like you said before, that's principle in nature. If muscles have evolved within this context, if lengthening is actually a principle of nature, a vertebrate function, then you would expect, no matter how closely you looked at a muscle fiber, you would find evidence for structures that are involved in resisting being pulled apart. And I think you do. I think it's absolutely.
Well, I mean, the Titan molecule, if you want to say something about it, I mean, that's clearly and in, clearly in, implicated, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, what was it, 7, 8 years ago? I remember reading an article saying, sort of like, the way that we understand muscle function really needs to be updated. We've got this very successful sliding filament model where, like just like you said before, there's a telescoping at the molecular level happening, and this is what creates contraction. But then it looks like there are all these other structures inside of muscle that, I don't know, are much more complex than they're so complex that they seem to be doing more than just I don't know, sitting there and doing nothing, sitting there and like providing structure. You know, and someone said, you know, there's one particular molecule within muscle called, you know, titin, T-I-T-I-N. It's a protein that seems to have a much bigger role, you know, like a much bigger importance than has been previously understood. And it's a molecule that can resist tension. It's like a molecule that can actually resist being pulled apart.
Yeah, and it tends to be activated when the muscle lengthens.
Yeah.
So if a muscle lengthens, it pulls back. It's not there by coincidence. It's part of nature's way of finding a balance between the tensile length of a muscle. You know, it's nature's way of making tensile qualities dynamic in a system where muscles lengthen.
Yeah. And
it's a far more economical way for muscles to maintain stability in a system than for muscles to actively contract.
That
way.
Yeah. It's like, you know, nature is like relying on things like proteins that, you know, like, you know, they don't require huge mechanical forces like a contraction of a muscle. These are proteins that have their own built-in resistance, you know, and there's also little active bits of these proteins where, you know, they can, you know, as the muscle is activated and being pulled apart and being sent signals, it activates even more. And it seems to maybe wrap around parts and give extra strength. And it just seems like, at every level, no matter how microscopically you look, it seems like muscle is finding ways to do work in this way, you know, to resist being pulled apart as an actual function.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of the ungulates, you know, some of the animals that graze, that big, you know, big heavy neck and head that spend a great deal of time with their head on the ground eating, you know, getting grass. They have a big, long, elastic yellow ligament that's, unlike other ligaments, is very stretchable. And the ligament, when the head is lowered and the head and neck are lowered, the ligament is stretched so that in order to raise the head, the ligament will do a lot of the work of rebounding to raise the head, because nature found yet another economical way for the animal to raise its head, not having to use active contraction in muscles. So you have connective tissue that has rebound properties so that when it's stretched, it'll rebound. And we have that through our whole connective tissue system. If a person is very elongated in their own system, they're going to have much more bounce and rebound. So they'll be able to bounce back from, let's say, bending much more easily than someone who's stiff and shortened. That's a simple, that's a tensegrity property. It's a tensile property where connective tissues store energy. And without any metabolic expenditure of energy, the body is able to rebound and produce movement without effort.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. And you know, with the, you know, it's hard to believe that even the contractile portion of muscle, even the muscle belly, which is kind of like the contractile portion of the connective tissue, really, even the muscle belly has, even the muscle belly participates in that storage of energy.
You know? Oh, yeah.
It's like it's like hard to believe based on sort of, you know, thinking that there's just two different filaments in the muscle. Like how is that possible that they can do that? And people might cast doubt on it. Well, wait a minute. There's actually other portions of the contractile portion of muscle that participate in contraction, but also resisting being pulled apart. So like even the contractile portion of muscle, what was previously thought of as just the contractile portion of the connective tissue system, even that participates in storing the energy of being pulled apart.
Yeah, I mean that's. But you say there are other. It's called the third filament. Yeah, I mean some people describe it that they said there's a third filament that's not part of the contractile mechanism, but a spring-like structure that resists being lengthened, helps.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I guess my language there. The even the muscle belly, even the muscle belly, participates in storing the energy of being pulled apart.
Yeah,
you know, that's an amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, how does this relate to being aware? If you want to be aware, if you want to identify or deal with muscle tension, let's say in your lower back. It's not enough to try to use your awareness simply to try to release tension. A key element is to understand how the muscles of the back are designed to work. Because if you understand how muscles letting go into length will restore properties, tensile properties in the entire musculature of the back, then the whole back can now work more efficiently. And the problem isn't just simply to reduce tension, but having restored the natural lengthening of the back muscles to figure out how to go back to activity without interfering with that natural length. Mm-hmm. So it changes the whole problem of muscle tension from a therapeutic problem, which is, you know, is something wrong with my muscles that I need to treat? You change it from that to becoming an educational problem, which is, how can I re-educate my system, get it working better, and now become conscious of how it works as a positive skill in learning how to use my body better? Mm-hmm. So, in a sense, the physiology opens the door to kind of a much more constructive and educational way of looking at back trouble. Which is what I'm interested in. I think this is fundamentally not a therapeutic problem, but an educational problem.
Yeah.
And part of the education is learning how the system works, not simply because it's something wrong with it we have to fix, but because it's got this amazing design and we're not very enlightened about the design because we treat everything as a problem to be cured.
Yeah. 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 And this is a restoration of, you know, what you call natural function. This is a totally different thing than a treatment or a simple stretch method or something. This is actually, there's a natural function at play. How do we restore it? And so it's like doubly educational. You know, like how do you learn to restore the system?
Yeah.
You know, the natural function. And then like, how do you learn to do regular things without jamming up the system,
without going back to the interference that caused the problem to begin with?
Yeah,
and that to me is a kind of a new stage, because you know, now we're not just simply you're not simply feeling better or getting your back working better, but now it's actually opened up a new stage and your awareness of the problem so you can use it better for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And then the question I often get is, well, Ted, you had back trouble. Is your back better? I'm thinking, well, if it wasn't better, I wouldn't be promoting the theory.
Right.
I mean, of course it's better, it's not even I don't even look at it anymore as a problem, as a symptom that I no longer have, because now there's a much deeper problem to be looked at and a much more valuable problem to be looked at.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like, how do you perform actions?
How is the whole, you know, how are we designed such that we can be free of back trouble? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And we don't, you know, in a funny way, I would say that most people, very often we don't want that because we want to be free of illness more than we want to be healthy, in a sense. We're more consumed by the notion of curing an illness than we are of understanding health as a positive quality. In fact, for the most part, we don't even, particularly with this area, we don't even know what it means to be healthy. We just We just right. want an absence of, you know, absence of the illness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we could, you know, there's more to be, there's more to the problem than that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you know, when you talk about gaining a new awareness of, you know, not just how the body works, but of, you know, this, you know, the restoration of natural function and specifically of muscles that we're talking about today, which is just part of the whole system. This is a little bit of the topic that we were talking about last time, you know, muscle tension and awareness.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, you know, getting the system, you know, getting the muscles back to natural function, figuring out how you've interfered and restoring, you know, through your own efforts, allowing the muscle system to restore itself to actual natural function opens up new organs of perception, basically. You know, this is one of my favorite topics that, you know, that you talk about, and I think I've mentioned it every time so far, you know.
Yeah, well, we have to, when you say that phrase though, I want to be clear, when you say a new organ of perception, that's you're borrowing that from a
right.
you know
yeah,
a
poem, right?
A Sufi quote, but yeah. The organ of perception here is not the muscle, although there is a way in which you could say this is a kinesthetic. The muscle the muscle's an organ, and it can functioning better. It gives you a new level of perception. But the organ of perception would be kinesthetic awareness becomes a higher order form of perception in a way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that when you've experienced how the whole back can work in a new way, you're not just getting back to what a child has. A child has a very often typical 2-year-old will have a perfectly working back. You're not just getting that back. You're getting it back at a conscious level, which now becomes, you know, gives you a new standard of awareness that you didn't have as a 2-year-old, mm-hmm. so that you can begin to identify what you're, you know, what caused the problem to begin with.
Yeah.
So if someone could magically give me the back of a 2-year-old, I'd say, no, not interested.
Mm.
I don't want to go back to that because that will beg the question of why I lost it to begin with. And you give someone if you gave someone a perfect body tomorrow, they'd go back to all their own habits and within a period of time. I want to know how I could be educated about it such that I understand what the problem was.
Yeah.
I want to know, I want to have a cause and effect understanding of, you know, of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the organ of perception, the element
right.
in
right.
knowing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, I think our next topic, James, was awareness, stages of awareness. So we can talk a little bit about that because it's a, you know, this is an, here we're talking about a stage of awareness where, again, we're not just curing something or feeling better or getting something working better, but we're getting it working better at a more conscious level, which represents a different stage in knowing how to do things.
Yeah.
And there are other elements of awareness that come into it. For instance, to be able to do this, you have to learn to become aware of just being too active and learning to quiet down and quiet the mind. So there are elements of awareness that go into this that we need to look at as part of understanding why awareness is even part of this.
Mm.
And maybe that'll be our next topic. Perhaps.
Yeah. 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 That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing. And so, yeah, just to, so yeah, we've been talking about muscle and making a big claim. You know, I think it's a big original claim that even the muscle belly is involved, and even at the smallest molecular level is an organ that has evolved to have the function of being able to resist being pulled apart. And that's actually, it's part of its natural function. It isn't simply a contractile organ. There's something more at play here. And this is how the human body produces its own form, its own postural support, even in complex movements. It's like how it's designed to function. I think that's a fascinating topic. I think that it's just one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It explains why, you know, when I wrote a book on skill years ago, yeah. And I made the case that skilled activity, that to me, the mark of really high level skill is not virtuosity, but effortlessness. Mm-hmm. Because there are some violinists quite brilliant, but when they're using a certain amount of tension and they're getting a result with tension, I would call that not as high level a skill as someone who might not even be quite the same level of virtuosity, but is able to produce nearly the same result with no effort. I would consider that, to me, the mark of real skill is effortlessness. And why is that? Because being able to perform complex activities without interfering with the natural design of the body, that's a mark of real high-level excellence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see that in certain performers, like a Pavarotti, let's say, singing. That's a mark of skill because there's such a lack of effort with such a beautiful outcome, you know.
I
think that can only be explained by elements of it. It can't be explained just by higher order cortical functions that control movements. It's a combination of higher order control combined with the ability not to interfere with lower order foundational elements in action.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, because when you say before, you know, there's a lack of effort, that doesn't mean that there's lack of work happening, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean like collapsing on the floor and being all relaxed, you know? There's a lack of effort, meaning, you know, there's a skilled effortlessness where natural functions aren't being interfered with and they can take over and can sort of use them skillfully.
Yeah. I mean, effortlessness is is the foundation of skill when it works well in nature. I mean, I would even say that, you know, it's the whole purpose of effortlessness is skill, is to be active. So even the notion that it's somehow lack of effort should be connected with relaxation or collapse or doing therapeutic techniques that remove you from activity is missing the whole point of being effortlessness.
Yeah.
Being effortless.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
meant to be about skill.
You know? Paucity of effort, but maximum output. You know, like paucity, or you know, the lowest energetic investment for the highest action output.
Yeah,
the biggest bang for the buck that nature can get. You know.
Yeah. Economy
of effort. Yeah. And like muscles being an organ that is like, even at the molecular levels, we would find evidence of it being totally designed to be an organ that also resists being pulled apart. Is part of this economy of effort, this like economy of energetic investment.
I just
love this claim. I think it's very cool, and I think it explains so much, and I think it could provide, a research paradigm for scientists who are interested. I love that idea. You know,
well, they are. You know, I mean, I do think some research is happening that's quite compelling, as you know.
Yeah. And it's cool how it's being found when it's looking for, you know, things like ballistic movements, you know, like, you know, the tongues of frogs, like the legs of frogs, where they seem to just like shoot like out of a gun.
Yeah.
How do you account for this just with muscles being contractile tissues?
Yeah.
You know, how do you account for that? I mean, it just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, muscle is a much more amazing thing than just a contractile tissue.
Yeah. You know? I agree with you.
But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the next next topic being awareness and stages of awareness and continuing on.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for joining. If you enjoyed this, please like and subscribe on YouTube, or subscribe and give a rating on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you, James.
Thank you, Ted. See everybody next time.